Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This week we're going to be speaking about a topic. It's really the third rail in Eretz Yisrael, and it's about frum boys in the army. Yeshiva Bachram in the army, is it possible to be frum? Should we be serving? And this is really a very hot topic, and I would like to see if on such a contentious issue, we could still create a masumatan, a dialogue that's thoughtful and friendly. And here are the questions. Do we have an achrayas to go to Fruma? I mean, doesn't it say by Bnei Gad u'Bnei Ruvain, Ha'acheichem yavoyu la'melchama va'atem teishfu fai? Like, you want your brothers to do the dirty work for you? We ask, what difficulties, if any, do Frum soldiers face in the army? What would a Frum army look like? If a majority of Eretz Yisrael is Frum, what will become then? Like, let's look ahead. When Ben-Gurion first gave the Torah to the Chazanish, it was 400 Bachram. It was less than 3% of the population. Today, the Frum element that should be going to the army if they were drafted would be 17%. Well, let's say we say, 70%, we have to keep them in yeshiva. But what happens if it's 50%, if it's 70%? Are we going to have the last 10 Frye Israelis standing by the border and everybody else not going to the army? Like, what's the shear? In Halacha, we'll be speaking about Hagisa b'yoyimu v'layla, all day and all night. Are you obligated to learn every spare second you have? Is it maybe health-related, stamina-related, financial ability-related? What does Hagisa b'yoyimu v'layla mean, l'halacha? Not clearly defined in the Shulchan Aruch. In fact, not defined at all. So we're going to have a number of Rabbanim. We're going to have a Rav who unfortunately would not allow his name to be used. That's how sensitive it is in Eretz Yisrael. A Talmud of Reb Shmuel Loyabach, a Talmud of Tifrach. He has connections, he says, to people who've been in the army for over 20 years. He'll be speaking about the Shita of sort of Bnei Brak. We'll have Rav Pinchas Friedman, the Rish Koil of the Bells of Koil of Eretz Yisrael. He's the Mechaber of Shvilei Pinchas. He'll be taking similar position. Then we'll have a soldier, Naftali Pudel, who listens to this program all the time. He's in the army. He's going to talk about what it's like being in the army for a frum person. We'll have Rabbi Yeshua Pfeffer, Rav in Yerushalayim, head of Netzach Yisrael Nahal Haredi. He'll be speaking about what it's like being a frum soldier in the army and also the shita of why the fruma don't want to be in the army. And then for the halacha topic, Vagisa b'yayim v'layla, all day and all night, we're going to have Rabbi Moshe Aaron Friedman, big Talmud Chacham, Agad Shir and Nemir. Should make for a really fascinating shir today. We got a number of emails I want to discuss. For the last few weeks, we've spoke about war. So one of the things we spoke about was, the very critical attitude a certain right-wing faction has about tzionim, tzionim, tzionim. And I said a lot of it comes from a sefer called Uvdis van Hoggis LeBeis Brisk, who we've read things from the sefer that we thought really stretched the imagination, stretched credibility. So now we got a letter from the nephew of Reb David Soloveitchik. And we put it online, but I thought it's important. He says, Dear Reb David, regarding your shir, you start off by mentioning the Sefer of the Van Hoggis LeBeis Brisk and your objections to some of its content. I am a nephew of Reb David Soloveitchik, that's all, and I have personally heard from my aunt, Aunt Judy, Reb David's Rebbetzin, that the author, Rabbi Miller, is not trustworthy. I repeat, the author, Rabbi Miller, is not trustworthy, and he has inserted countless stories and pictures that were neged rotz in HaMishpacha. She also told me this is the primary reason that there is no askama from her son, Reb Velbel Shwita, to the biography of Reb David, yet he goes around as Reb David's Talmud. I hope this is L'tayeleth and not Lashon Hara. He said, and many of your points pain me as well. He said, I was just in Eretz Yisrael in Kislev and met a fascinating soldier from Chardal. The mysterious nefesh they have, leaving their families, he lost friends, is mind-blowing. And we do this, we hear this mysterious nefesh while we sit reclining in our comfortable heated houses. But basically his position is, like I said, it's the American B'nai Torah who've consumed this, quote-unquote, what they believe to be Brisk ideology, which is false, right? Like we've had, this is the nephew of Reb David saying, Reb David's Rebbetzin said a lot of it. Yes, the Brisker of Bismani was against the Medina. He was against Tzionim, but to say such things that it's Avodah Zarah and it's Yerek Val Yaver, etc., etc., or to assume that it's going to continue forever is just sort of silly. It happened 80 years ago. Here's another email, which is really was the basis of what instigated this program. Hello, Reb David. Today I had the surreal experience of listening to your show about the quote-unquote controversial topic of showing Hakaras HaToiv to IDF soldiers. I listened to this as I walked from my office to Beis Yosef Street 51 in Talpiot Mizrach. Because earlier today I was forwarded a message that a 20-year-old Givati soldier named Eli Zrien had been killed in Gaza, and the Levaya would be later today. It's become somewhat of a minig here in Eretz Yisrael that neighbors and strangers gather outside the family home of the holy soldiers as they leave to the Beis HaKfaros to bury their children. The idea is to provide a measure of support and comfort, to send the message that we love the family and so grateful for the carbon they've become. So I was heading to Beis Yosef listening to your podcast. He says, I've been to 10 such gatherings since Simchas Torah. I knew what to expect. I'll spare the details of the heartbreaking tzaakis and screams that come from parents and brothers and sisters as it dawns on them that they're going to bury their son and they'll never see him again in this world. The sound and sight tear your neshama. It's in this setting I was listening to your commentary and interviews, and against this backdrop, that I was able to hear the opinions that there's no chiv of Hakaras HaToiv. The reality of the Haredi Tzibur is soul-crushingly depressing. There is zero self-awareness, zero reflection, zero cheshbon ha-nefesh, only tired slogans and tropes. They're scared that a young Haredi will see a wounded soldier or that family of a fallen soldier as human, and he might stop and reflect for a moment. He might question, how is it that every city, every moshav, every kibbutz, every hesder yeshiva has given so much? Well, not a single young man from Bnei Brak has fallen in the war. That's really a very powerful thing. So I want to talk about this. Is this correct or not? Should we be contributing or not? And why is this a debate? Because look, I grew up in the Haredi world, and I see the Mesiras Nefesh that the Haredim have, the Kol Yungalai, the Nias that they live, the dedication, their Avas HaTorah, the Shmiras HaMitzvahs, the Yira Shemayim, the sacrifice they make for themselves and their children. And I ask, why not? Why not here? What's the difference? And it all goes back to the letter for, you know, the Chazenish's request from Ben-Gurion to have a p'tur of the army. And my question is, and I put it to you, is there were 400 in the original request that the Chazenish made. And remember, this is in the aftermath of the Holocaust, where most of the great yeshivas were destroyed. Basically, all the great yeshivas, except for Meir, were destroyed. But Rav Aaron came from Kletzka was destroyed. Telz was destroyed. Baranovich, Rav Elchanan's yeshiva, was destroyed. Most of Slobodka that didn't escape, didn't leave before the war, was destroyed. You know, Rebetz Lepetterberg's yeshiva was destroyed, et cetera, et cetera. All these yeshivas, and there just weren't many left, not in America or in Eretz Yisrael. So this was the She'eris HaPleita. But now the 400 has turned into over 70,000. I remember when I was in the Mir, I learned by Rabbi Shmuel Birenbaum, so I got some mando or something. So I told him I wasn't feeling well. So he said, David, come 11 o'clock every day. Bissell, come for 2 hours. So I did. He sees me a few months later, and I'm coming late to yeshiva. He says, you know, what's the idea? So I said, Dor Shiva said I could come. He said, that's when you were sick 3 months ago. He says, now it's 3 months later. There's no more of an excuse. So is the Chazenish's p'tur forever? Could be, but it could be not. Imagine if a doctor tells somebody, you know, you're underweight, you have to gain weight. So the guy eats and eats, and he comes to the doctor a few months later, and now he weighs 400 pounds. Doctor's going to say, look, I told you should eat, but there's a shear. So of the 70,000, so what is the debate? Look, we certainly can't have everybody going to the army. We need yeshivas. Is the question as well, should some of the yeshivas, should they pick the better bachram? Maybe the bachram that are learning. Maybe in Bayim Shas HaMulcham, everybody should get trained because I feel a kalam echupasa by Mulcham is mitzvah. Those are the questions I want to discuss on today's program. We'll hear all the tzadim. I will, to the best of my ability, not take a position on this. So that is basically today's program. Before we go, I want to say a vart. Now, the Rambam famously says that a person is supposed to be mechabed his wife, yoyse migufay. Mechabed yoyse migufay is an interesting thing. By the egel, what was the Mishkan built with? The egel was built with the nizamim, the earrings and the jewelry of the women. They took the jewelry from the women. Rashi says a pshat why. I want to maybe say a different pshat. Now, it says that everybody left Bizas Hayam was so great, everybody, according to different Chazal, had camels full of silver and gold. Why did they need the jewelry of the women? Hara, we're coming up to Purim. And here's another Chazal. Achashverosh was bent on abusing Vashti. What? If you were married, right, she was the princess of the world. She was the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, this was the royalty. This is the queen's daughter, right? The queen of England's daughter. Why would you want to be mevaza her? Well, let me give you a thought, and I think it goes to the issue of tznius as well, which is one of the great topics. You know why Achashverosh had to be mevaza Vashti? Achashverosh was throwing a lecherous party, really a party full of avodah zarah, gilui arayos, shfichas dam, disgusting party. And you know what? When you throw a frat party, it's very hard to do that when there's a queen in the house. The Egel was koil anois anechi shemeya. It was a party, again, of gilui arayos, shfichas damim. When you want to throw a frat party, you can't have a queen in the house. So in both cases, what did they do? They took the jewelry off the women, and in Achashverosh's case, he was mevaza Vashti, kavua b'chazal. And why is that? Because if there's a queen in the house, it means two things. It means, first of all, you have to live up to a certain state. You have to behave in a certain fashion. And secondly, if there's a queen in the house, doesn't that mean that you're a king? And how could a king behave this way? You know, they say over a story, the governor of Texas was driving across his very great state, and he had to stop with his wife, and they had to stop for fuel. So they stopped by a big fueling station. Suddenly his wife looks around, and she sees like a few aisles over, there's a tall, good-looking fellow washing the window, filling gas. And she gets out, and she walks 2 aisles over to him, and she has a deep, meaningful conversation with this fellow for like 5 minutes. And then she comes back into the car, and she sits down, and she's clearly quite disturbed. So the governor doesn't say anything, and they're driving, and after half an hour, he says, "Seems like you knew that fellow." And she says, "Yes, he was actually, at one point, my boyfriend. I dated him." So he said to her, "It must make you wonder if you had married him, like where you would be today, like married to a gas station attendant as opposed to married to me." And she looked at him, she said, "Actually, no. If I had married him, he would be the governor of Texas." What does the Rambam say? The Rambam say you have to be mechabda yaisemi gufay. And that's what sneas is. You know what sneas is? If you look at a girl who's sneastic dressed, doesn't it look the way Queen Elizabeth dressed? And is that a coincidence? Sneas means dignity. I'm a queen, and if I'm a queen, this is how I dress. And this is how I behave. And the halachas in the Shulchan Aruch of sneas really map this. Like, does anybody look at a Muslim woman? If we understand sneas, you know, sneas is just as I'm behalten. Does anybody look at a Muslim woman in a burqa and say, "Ooh, this is sneas"? No, that's not sneas. That's denigration of woman. That's not a queen. And if you would note, there are elements of our society, American society, that are particularly abusive the way they speak about their women. They call them names that I can't repeat here on the show. And they call them all kinds of real evil. And the men are highest. And you know what the answer is, this group of society? You can't be a chaya if the woman would be a malka. If you want to act like a chaya, you have to call her the names you call her. You know, they stay over that that when Joe Lieberman lost the election, he was almost the first Jewish vice president, so he came home and he told his wife, he said, he was obviously very upset. He said, "I'm very upset." She said, "Because you're not the vice president?" So he said, "Yes." So she said to him, "Joe, don't worry. In this house, you'll always be the vice president." So when you want to explain sneas to your daughter or to your spouse, say sneas is about we want a queen in the house. Because if there's a queen in the house, It requires a behavior, but it also means that I'm a king. Let's go to our riddles of the week.
So it says, first the women came, and then the men came.
And the Rambam paskins that a woman is mechuyev in binyan hamishkan, binyan hamigdash.
And the Kesef Mishnah, in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Beis HaBchira Halach Yud Beis, says, where does the Rambam get it from? It's not a Gemara.
The Rambam gets it from this pasuk.
And in fact, the Ramban and the Ritva argue, and they say there's no raya from this pasuk. He says maybe the women brought it,
Bataris Nadava, not Bataris Chiyav.
The Rambam learns, Ve'yavayu anashim ala nashim, and that's why they're called nashim amachuyu binyan beis hamigdash.
Now here's the Pella. All of surrounding the binyan hamishkan is Shabbos.
We have Shamru b'nei Yisrael for Shabbos. What does Rashi say to tell you that binyan beis hamigdash is not the Shabbos? There's no binyan beis hamigdash of mishkan on Shabbos.
So l'chayra, Mishkan is a mitzvah saseh shazman grama because it's not built on Shabbos.
If it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, how could the Rambam learn that nashim amachuyev from the pasuk?
Adraba, you can't be doichan. You should learn the pasuk in the most minimal way. It could mean that it's just a nedava, and if it's just a nedava, you're not going to be doichan the klal of kala tarakula that a mitzvah saseh shazman grama nashim apturais.
You should learn kapshutai. So, Mitzvah Seish is wrong grammar. Nashima Pturais. I have a raya from the Pasuk. It's not a raya from the Pasuk. It's an Adafa. It's a Pella on the Shitas HaRambam.
If you want to leave a message by phone or dial in by phone to listen, in America, our number is 732-806-8700. In England, it's 44, that's the country code, 33-011-70250. In Eretz Yisrael, it's 02-372-0304.
Let's go to our wonderful guest.
Joining us from Yerushalayim, Israel, he was the rabbi of 20 years involved with the Israeli army. He learned in the big yeshivas Tifrach. He learned by Reb Shmuel Auerbach. He learned in Hebron. Welcome. So here's the questions that we get from our listeners. By B'nei Gad u'B'nei Ruvain, it says, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say? And I'm paraphrasing. He says, Ha'atem teishu po, you're going to sit here. Tachechem yavayu l'molchama, and your brothers will go to war. Like, how could you not be chayinai seis atzmai? Why aren't you bearing your own responsibility? And another fellow asked me, he said, you know, every little tiniest kibbutz, yishuv, moshav in Eretz Yisrael has lost their soldiers in the war fighting for Eretz Yisrael. Except for Bnei Brak, a city of hundreds of thousands of people, nobody lost because there's really nobody serving. He says, what's with the achrayas of Noisa Boilum Chaveri, befrat in something that's a mochemes mitzvah? After the Holocaust, don't we as Yidden recognize the necessity to? So, of course, there's a mitzvah we need. And Mar says, of course we need B'nai Torah, but do you need 70,000 people who aren't going to war? They're all takashtaking so much. You don't have boys who aren't learning so much. Let the really good ones stay. And those that aren't studying so much, let them go. But let them, that's sort of the questions that we hear in America. How would you, what's the response?
Okay, you asked me four questions together. Let's go one by one. First of all, they over me God that Moshe told them, your brother is going to go to the war and you're going to stay out. The situation changed. At the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, all the Jews were going on the way of the Torah.
Wait. The Gam Erev Rav Eloi Mayim, the Erev Rav made the Egel, the Erev Rav Udasan Aviram, you had the Erev Rav Be'edas Kairas. It's a big Gam Erev Rav Eloi Mayim. So it wasn't a simple thing, you know?
But anyway, the Hanog of Am Yisrael and the majority of Am Yisrael was in the right hands, the hands of the Hanog of Moshe Rabbeinu. And he was giving the line, he was giving the way. The situation is different today. Today we're in a state that the state is not religious. Non-religious Zionist ideology is not to keep Torah. It's to do a new type of a Jew We have our power, we have our financials, we are one of the regular states in the world, and this is the problem we have. If Am Yisrael was on the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, that the majority and most Am Yisrael was going on the way of the Torah, you're right. Why? We're sitting in Nebrak and not serving the army, and the rest of Am Yisrael is going. But today the case is different. Most of Am Yisrael is outside the fence. Whoever's leading Am Yisrael is people against the Torah. But we need to say it clear. Netanyahu, they asked him to put on tefillin he didn't want. The head of the Israeli army, most of them, they don't believe in God. We need to say it clear. It means that whoever's doing the hanaga here in Am Yisrael in these days are non-religious people. But something interesting is happening. The Israeli army, the soldiers are amazing. The soldiers downstairs are doing an amazing revolution. They believe in God. They want the religion in the army. So some big change happened. But in this moment, we're in a state that most of Am Yisrael is out of the fence. We have 1 million kids not learning one word of religion. Now, we have only 70,000. We have almost 10 million people in Israel. 70,000. Only, it's, how much is that? Less than a percent.
70,000, not who are from. It's 17% of the draft-going age. 17%. The army would be bigger, 17%. 70,000 on shoulders. There's only 400,000 soldiers who could be called up, right? So
the numbers are much more bigger. If you take the miluim and the soldiers, it's much more than 400,000.
So then it's 17%. That's the number who would be going to the army.
Okay.
So that's a very significant amount. Not of all the ladies or the children or the older people. 17% according to the army are the, and it's up from originally it's 2.5%. But the Chazanish made his tour was 2.5%. Today it's 17%.
Let me finish. It's okay. It doesn't matter how much percent we are. But you remember the meeting between Eshel, the general, and Rav Adlan. We told him clearly. This land wants to...
Say over the story. Please say over the story.
Okay, we have a very special soldier name. His family name is Eshel. I think his first word. I forgot his first name. He has Aluf Mishneh. He has three stars on the soldiers. He's very religious. He's the family of Alabel Elopian. He's going to the army, serving in Gaza. He's sacrificing his life, and a lot of the soldiers got killed. And he came very upset to Rav Landon. He says, what's going on here? We're fighting our life for Am Yisrael. And the yeshiva boys are sitting in the yeshiva. So just show that you care. Come to the funerals. Just show that you care. Go to be mevaker people in hospitals. Just to be cool and just show that you care. And be a part of the war, of this matter. And Rav Lando was clear. No. Come to the Levaya. Just show yourself. And he said, no. He said, Rabbi, what do you mean no? Rabbi says, look.
He said, just one. Then he said, just every yeshiva boy should go to one Levaya.
Yes,
one Bikur Chayilim, one Nicham Aveilim, and Rav Lando says, no, not even one.
And the rabbi says, no, and the rabbi said, answer, this is the best Eretz, and it shocked me. What the rabbi means, that Eretz Yisrael is not going on the way of the Torah, and this land, the Torah says, in the chukotai telechu v'netati shalom. But if we don't go on the way of the Torah, this land wants to throw la'ki otanu mipo. I don't want to say la'ki, let's throw up us from this land. And most of this land, most of the Jews here, you know, not Shabbos, gay parades. This land was supposed to throw us up out of here. I was sitting in Israel. The Torah says if we're going to do these bad things, the land is going to throw us out of here. And we're not reacting in the right way. The rabbi says, because the land wants to kick us out of here, because the Torah says. And what's blocking? When somebody wants to throw up, you're giving him a pill, and the pill is blocking them to throw up. He's telling him the pill that's blocking Am Yisrael to be kicked out of this land is the people that are learning Torah. If you're going to touch them, you're touching this pill, and we're not going to be here. Learning Torah is what's holding us here. When I was a young guy in the street,
let me ask you a question before. Let's say it wouldn't be 70%. Let's say it would be 50% from. Would you say the same thing? And 50% were very fry. Would you say the same thing?
This is the question that Ben Gurion asked the Chazon Ish. Exactly that question. You told the Chazon Ish, okay, you are now 600 yeshiva boys. But if everybody's going to learn Torah, who's going to go to the army? And the Chazon Ish answered this answer. The Chazon Ish told him that there was a boy from Siberia. You say Siberian Rene. It's a freezing area of Russia. Freezing like Alaska. There was a boy going dating out a girl, Shidduch. And this area is freezing. It's 60 below zero, 40 below zero, no. And he went out with the girl, and he took you need to put on your ears, something to warm your ear. And he took the earphones out of the ear, and he wanted to hear the girl talking. In the middle of the girl talking, starting to yell to the girl, my ear is froze. And it's very dangerous, because when your ear is froze, this part of the organ of your body is under danger. So the girl told him, don't panic. Take snow from the floor and the Chiddush of Shif toes, and how do you say it in English, these words, the Chiddush of Shif toes, and in a
rub your ear with snow.
And he started doing it. And after a few minutes, he's feeling, oh, I have very strong pain. And he's starting to feel the air back. So he looked on the grill and he thought, wow, thank God that today was snow, and I had a snow to take the snow and finish up shift my organ, my ear, to bring it back to life. I think it was today a hot day, and we're going to have sun, and we had a sun. So where am I going to find snow to heal my ear? Chavinish told us, right, when everybody's going to learn Torah, you need to know we're not going to have problems, because we believe in that. We believe in that we don't have problems. It means, our problem is that we don't believe 100% in what we do.
So you're saying that if 50% were learning, then we would not have wars, we would have peace.
First of all, let's talk about it. If 50% were learning, Koach HaTorah was magen of us, for sure. Not 100%.
We would not have war.
Now, how much we are? How much percent of religious people we in Israel? We're 1 million black at religious. That's it. We have 9 million on the second side. Take out the Arabs. We have 6 million on the second side. We're not the main part of Israel. We're very little holding the fire of the Torah. Why we're not coming to a guy that's driving a tank and telling him, beat one day on the tank, one day on the Air Force, it's going to help a lot? Because, no, my job is very important. I'm not going to leave the tank. And in every job in the world, somebody's doing a job, let him do it the best. When we're learning Torah, you cannot play with the Torah one day, learn one day.
So I'm just going to see you again. Going back to his mashal, you're saying that if we were all learning the Torah, we wouldn't have a war. Was that the message of the Chazon Ish?
But the Chazon Ish and also Chizkiyahu HaMelech on the time of...
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
It says, in B'chukai Sai Teilecho, what does Rashi say? Shetei HaMelem B'Taira.
Yes.
Right? And what does the Pasuk say after them? The Nasu Echad Mechameya. So there's going to be war, even if in B'chukai Sai Teilecho, Shetei HaMelem B'Taira. And Moshe Rabbeinu had an army. You just said before by Moshe Rabbeinu, he said you can't compare now to the Moshe Rabbeinu got there because everybody was from there, or the majority were from. And Moshe Rabbeinu had war. And Yeshua, when he went into Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua had war. And all the Shoftim, Shaul, Shmuel, they all had war. And David HaMelech had war. And Shlomo HaMelech had war. And Chizkiyahu HaMelech had war. What you're saying, but today in Eretz Yisrael, if we learned, we wouldn't have war. We'd be better than all of them.
Good question. Either we're going to have wars, we're not going to get damaged from the wars. On Chizkiyahu HaMelech, we had the war, we didn't get damaged. They died alone. It means people are going to try to come back us.
Well, we've lost a lot of wars.
God is promising us about shalom.
I'm going to say we lost
it. Shalom is going to be, whoever's going to try to start to touch you, look what's going to happen to them.
Well, look what happened with Chizkiyahu HaNavi. He lost war to Melech Aram, right? He had to go be Mispal. And David HaMelech lost wars. And the whole Shoftim is full of wars that were lost. Many were won, but many were lost.
100%.
So if we were from, if Israel was 50% from, according to the Torah, we would still have wars. So would the from have to go out to those wars or no?
And look, if you, the Tainus you're saying is a very strong Tainus. And the answer I can give you on the Tainus is that we are the world of the Haredim. The concept of our life is different than all the groups in our religion. We have the non-religious, we have the modern Orthodox, we have the Mizrahi, and we have the Haredim. Mami Yechid, what's doing the Haredim special than everybody? That we have one thing that we're not moving from that. We call it Da'at Torah. Da'at Torah means we could have the best Tainus in the world. We could learn the Torah and understand the best way that we need to go to the army. But bottom line, you're coming to Torah Tov, and as I can assure by your mind, and you tell him, Rabbi, this what do we understand? We need to go to the army, yes, and if he says yes, it's yes, if he says no, it's no. Because they see more than us. They know all the psukim that you're telling me. They know all the stories that you, the amazing stories that went from the Gach that everybody had words, and they see everything, and they say, but we know that now the Torah needs to be here, and we cannot touch the army. And this is the idea in the Haredim. Even me and you agree that we need to go to the army. If the Shofet is going to say no, that's how we cannot do nothing. So me and you are very smart people, and you're giving the best times in the world, and also the Rambam said, Milchemet Mitzvah, everybody goes to the war. Everything is right. But Gedol HaDor knows everything, and he knows all the stories, and he's cancelling everything together, and God is giving the Siyata Dishma, and he says, no is no. And the second the big rabbi is going to say, no, and we're going to be smarter than them, said, but we understand that, yes, we lost. We lost our religion, because our religion is the Yotzefuf in Torah Ador.
Okay, so let me respond to that. Wait, let me go point by point. Wait, I want to go point by point.
You're right. But Gdolador says no, we're Nichmal Gdolador. That's it. This is the way of the world.
Okay. Let me respond one by one, okay? The Torah tells us about a par helam davar. What happened? Right. He says to Einei Eida. What is it talking about? That the Gadol HaDor in Yerushalayim, the Sanhedrin, were Toya in Avodah Zara, in the Gimel Chamuris. What's the halacha? You need karbanis.
You need the korbanis.
Yeah. So the Rishonim, the Achronim, the Rishonim. Why is there a chi of carbon? Everybody's an Einus. Why does Klal Yisrael a chi of carbanis? We're Einus. We listened to the Gadol HaDor. And we've quoted on this program before the tshuva. There's a tshuva from the Sanzer of about a community where the rabbi measured the mikveh wrong, Rachman Olatzlan. And for, I remember it was 25 years, the whole community used the mikveh. And then when he was nissed, a new rav came in. And for some reason, the rav remeasured the mikveh, and he found out that there was an arba emsa. So they asked him, are we mechuyev kapara on that, or are we oinus? Imagine if you eat something, it has on it the hechsher of the badats or bells or whatever you eat, and you find out afterwards they made a mistake in its treif. Are you mechuyev carbon? He said, look, what did I do? I'm besaymach on the best hechsher. And Allah is, he paskin, of course, you mechuyev carbon. Why? You see that from the par helam davar, that by Klal Yisrael, there's no concept of, I relied on him and I closed my eyes and therefore I'm pata. You still have a din of a shaygeg, you're not an oinus. So, of course, we have to listen to the Gedalei Hadar, but we also have to ask questions. It's not my question. I don't have questions, but the questions we're having from our listenership are, we see that as a concept of a Mochemes Mitzvah, and who goes out to a Mochemes Mitzvah? What does the Torah say? Afilu imchata bein miha ish harach levav. So what does Rashi say? He was chait. What was his chait? Shadibur bein tfilin shal yadol tfilin shal reish. He doesn't go. So who goes to war? Fakert. Only the most erlucha people. So a guy asks, what's the p'tur that you're so erlucha and you don't go? If I cared from the Torah we see, it's the most erlucha that are supposed to go, and they will be the menatzeach. So shouldn't Alpi Torah be the opposite, where the most erlucha people should go, and that way we'll be guaranteed in the tzachin? And like I heard over from Rav Kotla in Lakewood a generation ago, he said that the maskila made a play in the army. You know the story, and they in the end, he said that it was supposed to be a comedy, that they had an army going out, and they said, Mia ish harach leva, Mia ish shenasa isha, and it kept dwindling down and down, Mia shenata keren, then Mia ish harach leva shedibin. So everybody left when it says, who has an aver shabiyadi, except for half a time in the Zolma Gayan. And Rav Kotla said, but they won, that's missing, these two won. So according to Torah, it's punkt fakert. The frumis should be in the army, and we should tell the frayis, what you're doing isn't good, so why don't you go to, the frumis should go to the army. So what we're doing today is upside down from what the Torah. So I'm answering why we have to ask the question. And the question is, it's upside down today. Why aren't the frumis going? Rav Landau should be on the front of the army.
Okay.
That's my question.
I'll give you a story. And your question you're asking is good like 2,000 years ago. Today we're 2024. We're in a different world. And the very short story to understand what's going on. Chafamish passed away. There was a Knesset member named Leizerson.
Leizerson.
He wrote down a book in Chitzatam Shigdolei Yisrael. And Ben-Gurion called him, told him the Chafamish passed away. Now your new rabbi is the Bishkarov. Tell the Bishkarov that I don't care the deal that did with the Chazonish, that the boys and the girls of the Haredim are not going to the army. Tell him that I said, oh, give me the boys or give me the girls. No games. I'm not going to let two of them not to go. He went to the Bishkarov and he told him, Ben-Gurion says, the deal of Chazonish is over. Ben-Gurion told me to tell it to you. He says, Rabbi, you have two decisions. Or the boys to bring to the army or the girls. Two of them are not going to the army. We're not going to let Haredim. The Bishkarov looked at him and he said, go to the Ben-Gurion. I'm going to give him all the Shia boys. But the girls, he's not going to take one. Leizerson said, and check in one of his books, but I was young, and I heard him saying this in a class at Neibach, and that's what he said. He got inside the room of Ben-Gurion and told Ben-Gurion, the rabbi says that you could take all the Shiva boys to the armies. The girls you're not going to touch. And Ben-Gurion and that woman knocked on the table, and he got upset. He says, your rabbi knows how to read my mind. I wanted the girls. I didn't want the boys. That's what they told him. What Ben-Gurion says, I'm using this army to do my ideology. I want boys and girls together. Today, look at the Israeli army. You're talking about Tzadikim and everybody. What are you talking about? All the head of the Israeli army are progressive people. They believe in all the worst things that you want. The Israeli army today in every single unit is boys and girls together for one reason, to block us out of the army. So what are you talking about? We need to go to which army are you talking about? if the army was really wanted to do it, so the army starting to look on the way of the Torah. How is the way of the Torah? What are you talking about? You know,
so
a group of
you're saying that if they would create battalions in the army that were totally Haredi, that were run by, you know, the sergeants or whoever were B'nai Torah that came from B'nai Brak, but they knew how to fight, and the Hanan maybe would go to the army.
Look, if you're asking me to build a battalion of yeshiva boys, my ideology and my mashkofa is yes, do it. Why I don't do it? Why I'm not pushing to do it? Because Gdol Israel says no, so I'm acknowledging Gdol Israel. I don't understand everything. They're on the top of the mountain and they see far away. I'm a small person. I just see very close to me. Very close to me looks like the right thing to do. And looks like the mitzvah.
Do you think they would agree if it was totally from battalion you should go or no?
I don't think me and you, yeah, I'm going to push it. But what's blocking me is Kniya L'Gdolei Yisrael. If you want to do something you don't know it's good or no, Tzilach B'Yikvei Atzon, go after the leaders of the Sheev, Gdolei Ador, and ask them to do it.
So okay, we have to ask that.
But what can I do? When you have to Gdolei Yisrael,
I understand.
And it's a beautiful thing. You build a gigantic battalion with Batei Midrash. Half day they're learning, half day they're serving, or 1 week they're learning. One day we have so much ideas to do. But bottom line, and I don't think they're going to give us permission to this. If they don't give permission, then battle that it'll be snared. And that's the reason all the conversation that we're doing to go to the army, not to go. Think one day Gdolador says we need to go to the army. At that moment, all the religions are changing there. So it's not us, and it's not how we think. It's bottom line, the keys in the hands of the lace, wrong. And all the conversations we're doing is nonsense, because they're going to say yes, it's no, no. That's okay. I think that's the bottom line here.
Do you know why they would say no? Like, what is, could you give us an insight into what they're thinking?
Look, Rav Shach, he said it once on the Afrikaans, I heard Rav Shach, he said something amazing. He says, why we're not going to the army? Why not? Rav Shach said, look, because when the world is reacting regular, so cars are riding on the street, people are going on the sidewalk. When it's red, the cars are stopping. When it's green, they're driving. But if we're in an emergency case, cars are driving on the sideway, on the red line, everybody's going on red because it's emergency. Rav Shach says, really? It needs to be half of the people learning, half in the army. But now we're in an emergency case, no rules. The rules are changing. We need everybody sitting and learning Torah because the situation of Am Yisrael is emergency. They saw in the Ashkofa that this Torah, that's what we need now. So what we can do? Because we're an emergency case. Because really, you're giving very good points. Also, points to Meshachnea. What's going on here? And you're right. But what Lord says, you don't understand. We're now in an emergency case. Nothing. We cannot do nothing. And if we do have to go to the Lord, on the time of Kirim and Nonichshan, look at the Mizrahi. You have an amazing Mizrahi rabbi name. But Eli Sadan, you heard about him?
No.
He built a Mechina Kedam Tzvait in Eli. I love this Mechina. Mechina Kedam, a lot of soldiers got killed from that group, a lot. And by the way, it's not right that people, soldiers from the Haredi community didn't kill them. At 7 in October, a lot of Haredi families were sitting Shiva in my neighborhood, Ramot. A lot. But the big and what's going on here? Yes, you have Haredim that were serving in the army. But they don't want to talk it because the Israeli media is all the time putting poison to people. Look at the Haredi, look at the Haredi. Okay, look, we're not selfish, the Haredi. We're so much volunteers. All the big organization of Haredi. So really, if we're people that we so want to help, why we're not going to the army? Not the ideology problem here. We cannot keep it and go on it. Okay, this is where we are now. What we can do, that's it.
Yeah. And Michael, do you think that as the population of Haredim grows, it'll change?
Very good question. If it's going to grow up, depends on the Hanoga of the Medina, how is it going to react? I wanted to tell you about Eli Sadan. I'll tell you, this is he saw that all the Kippah Sugah, they're going to the army, a lot of them are taking out the kippah. It's something interesting. The Israeli Hanoga didn't build the Israeli army only to protect Am Yisrael. Had another reason. They said that Kuvai Tuha Israeli is the place that they're building the new type of Israeli. So every Israeli that goes through the army, we're creating for him a new type of human Israeli. Usually it's not religious, or even it's religious, very light. And he says, look, the new type of Israel, everybody taking out the kippah. And he says, we're going to change this game. And he built up Mechina Kedam Tzvait name, Bnei David and Eli. And he said, okay, guys, now the game is changing. We don't do any more Hezder. A year and a half, and that's it. We're doing now to the army 3 years. But I'm going to train you before the army 2 years and build you a scuff of terror very strong. And we're going to go to the army not to be soldiers, to be leaders. And it's way worked. a lot of high generals in the Israeli army are coming from that mechina. He won the Israeli army. He took it. But I see a lot of dead bodies. What do you mean dead bodies? A lot of young guys took out the kippah. You know, 50% of the guys that go in kippah, the army taking out the kippah. It's not pursuit.
We had an Israeli soldier on before you, and he said all his friends, they came out of the army, the same or a lot from, they became spoiled, and they were
right. I'm a lot in the Israeli army. I need to be very honest. The Israeli army is doing a dramatic change to the right way. Especially 7th of October, it showed us that the soldiers are on the right side. And the Israeli army is amazing. What I'm talking about, Israeli, not against the Israeli army, because the Israeli army is a really high level, high, echut enoshit hachi gvoa, and also echut ruchonit. Very.
What does that mean? Would you say that in English? What did you say?
I'm not going to say it in English. I'm going to say it in Hebrew. Echut enoshit, the personality of the people are very high level, and echut ruchonit. And, I'll give you an example. I passed in this from our community millions of dollars to the Israeli army. I was not the one. Some of the money I collect, some of the money people pass through me to the Israeli army. And I spend already 4 months of spending with the Israeli army helping them, either I'm all day sitting and learning Torah. And one day, the army took me to Kfar Aza, and on the fence of Kfar Aza was standing a soldier. I'm talking to the soldier, let me in. He says, we don't let the civilians inside. I gave him the number that they gave me, and he says, you could go inside. I told him, thank you very much, God bless you. He says, I don't need God in my life, and without God, we're going to win them. That's the word he told me. So I told him, what are you doing here? He said, I'm Sayyid Divati, high-level unit. I said, okay, you don't need God. Okay, we're going to help ourselves. Yes, you need for me something? He says, what are you going to give me? I said, I don't want to pray for you. You need help? He says, yes, I need vests and I need a hat, tactic hat, you know? I gave him everything. I got friendly with that group of the units and with this guy that is very lefty and anti-religious. Every day, I was calling his friends, calling him, he needs more things. One day, his friend saw me a picture that he took on this soldier that took against God behind his back. You know what was the picture in the picture? That the guy woke up in the morning and he was dressing up with his uniforms. And he showed me in the picture that under his uniforms, he has a tzitzit. You understand? This is the worst soldier in the world. He's a tzaddik. He's wearing the tzitzit. And it's not him. It's all the Israeli army today. The Israeli army is doing a beautiful change. And this is the luck that God gave us that we're going on the right way. When I'm talking against the army, it's not against the soldiers. It's against the leaders of the army. By the way, they also bring us to very bad places in the 7th of October. Look what they did to us. All the Israeli army fell asleep because of our generals. The generals are one thing. When you clear that gold, something that we don't understand. These soldiers, we need to kiss the legs every day. This is our school to kiss the legs of the soldiers. Not they're doing it's a mitzvah for me to kiss the legs because what they're doing for us and how they're doing it specially, no army in the world. And
well, thank you very much. This was really fabulous. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Okay, cool. Bye-bye.
Joining us from Yerushalayim is Rav HaGaon Rav Pinchas Friedman. He's the Mechaber Sfarim Shvilei Pinchas. He's also the Rosh Kolim of Bells in Yerushalayim. Welcome, Rav Pinchas.
Aleichem Shalom. Shalom Aleichem.
So let me ask you a halacha hashgafa shayla.
Right.
Okay, it's a complicated shayla. When the Chazon Ish and Ben-Gurion famously met, and the Chazon Ish told him, I don't know the exact number, 100, 200, 300 Peturim, 400 Psurim for my army, Bachrim, and he convinced Ben-Gurion. Ben-Gurion said yes. And it was not a material number, whether you have a few hundred soldiers more or not, right?
Right.
Today, supposedly, and I'm using its rounded numbers, 70,000 people who would otherwise be soldiers who are missing because of this Ptur, right? And it's causing politic now. They want to renew the Ptur, and they're saying, on the other hand, you're increasing army length for everybody else. Okay, Indian Bifnayatsmai. My question to you is there any point where you say, listen, today it's 70, maybe it's 17% of the army. Let's say it's can I know, they're having one kid's a family, we're having 10 kids a family, or some places have 14 or 15. In X number of years, we're going to be 50% of the army, Bahram, or 75%, or 90%. So does the Chazon Ish's Ptur remain, Shita remain forever,
Or is it like, you know, somebody goes to the doctor, the doctor says, you know, you're underweight, you have to eat, you know, butter every day and fette zachen, and he comes back to the doctor one day and he weighs 400 pounds, and the doctor says, you know, I didn't mean here, I meant that was right, you know, when you reached 175 pounds, you have to start eating. It's like, how do you look at it? Is there ever a point where we have to say, you know, we have to join because we live here and we have to protect the country? And this is the Derech HaTeva, and, you know, Moshe had an army, and Yeshua had an army, and David HaMelech had an army, and Shlomo had an army, and Chizkiah, and we need one too. That's sort of a question I'm laying out for you.
Okay, very delicate question. I'm going to try to be very honest about this question. Really, this question has a lot of complications with it, meaning taking into consideration the danger in the ruchnius of going to the army, taking in consideration that the decisions were to live or to make peace or not to make peace is a very political and not theoretic decision for the time being. So really this question needs to be put forward for Gedolei Yisrael, and not only one Godel, but all Gedolei Yisrael, I would say, like, just like the form of Sanhedrin, that all the Gedolei Yisrael should get together and say, how do we deal with this situation? For the time being, unfortunately, we are very, very far from being free of the danger of people going into the army and not getting weak in Yiddishkeit. There's always comes up the question of about, you know, women and not women. Yes, we're going to make separate, but and there is going to the Bagatz and fighting. So we are not in a place to deal with this question. And it's not that you want to try to get out of the question. It's really not the time. Unfortunately, the situation is far from ripe. The leaders are people who are not Shomer Shabbos, and I'm saying it with the greatest respect. They are not Bnei Torah. So for the time being, the question is not it's not yet ripe for this question. And therefore, nobody feels for the time being that we can let go of the Yeshiva Bocharim, and believing that really the Shmira that we have in Eretz Yisrael, it may sound for those who are a little bit overly intellectual, but the truth is that we are having Shmira B'schis Limud HaTorah, like the Gemara says. It's unbelievable that why did we have Golas Mitzrayim, we're coming up with Pesach? It's because Avraham Avinu took Talmid HaChachomim to the army, Shaharikon. He took them and gave them weapons to fight instead of learning Torah. So we see that there is such a hastoga that Torah has a real significance and a real shmira. So unfortunately for the time being, when we are nebuch split, yeah, you're saying in 10 years, in 20 years, always when there's going to come up a problem, there's always going to be solutions. There will always be gedolim that will be able to lead us what to do and what not to do. For the time being, unfortunately, we're not there yet.
So let me paraphrase the question differently. The Gemara says that Elmale, David, Yoav would not have been Matzliach and Mohammed.
Right.
Right? So in other words, B'schus David's Tzilus and Torah, Yoav was Matzliach in the battlefield. So let's mind the Polig that you have to have people learning. And without the Tzilus, the army would not. We believe it's a Ruchniistic war as much as a Gashmiistic war.
Right.
And also in the case of Avram, the Gemara says that the Angari B'Talmud HaCham and Marsha already says that it was not a Mulchemes Mitzvah, because he asks, how could you do when it says Afil Kala Mechupasa? He says, but Avram was not a Mulchemes Mitzvah. So what would be if it was a Mulchemes Mitzvah, which is where they're trying to kill you, it's Hatzalah, it's not an aggressive war, but it's a defensive war, and we were 75% of the population. Now, there's always danger in an army. So would we, and there's always going to be generals who are not, you know, we're going to have maps from a generals. You always have that option. Is it ever foreseeable, like, that we could never field an army again post-Tanakh?
This is the question about, you know, believing that we need to wait for the Geula and we cannot take it in our own hands. And you know, this is the Chitif and the Satmarov, but a lot of go with it. Even those who thought that, you know, a lot of things we should participate. But about, you know, knowing that we're still in Golos. And unfortunately, this is the situation we see over here in Eretz Yisrael, which I live in Eretz Yisrael, and we see that we are dependent. We are dependent on weapons from Biden and we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that's the fact. So your question is a theoretical. The question would be: Is it the time that we should take in our own hands and have a country when we don't have the power and it's not yet the Geula, which is the shit of the Satmar Rebbe? It's before the time. It's a very theoretical question.
Well, we're at 17%. It doesn't take that long to go from 17 to 34%.
It takes so many years. It takes so many years, Rav Lichtenstein. And it takes so much siyata d'shamaya. And there is so much, I don't want to use the word blood, chas v'chalila, but there's so much wars that we're still going to go through. We are so far from there. We are now, and I really believe that. And I really believe that we are in a stage of having so many children fall out of Yiddishkeit because of the great Nisyonis. So many going to the army and coming back different people than they went. So those who believe and go, okay, but we're not yet there. It's a nice fantasy, theoretical question, but there is so much information and so much details that need to happen, and still we will ask the question, can we do it before Mashiach is coming, or we're not ready for that? The world, we are surrounded. You know, when we see the hate of the Bnei Esav, I'm an American, so I can use the word you Americans because I'm part of it. Who would believe that millions of Christians, who the Muslims hate more than Jews, are standing up for Muslims, Rabbeinu Dalma Killer? What did we do to them? This is how Loche Beyod. And when we are surrounded with so much hate, how could we govern on our own before Mashiach is coming? And I really believe in that. And you don't need to be the biggest Satmar Chosid, but let's use logic. Could you believe, Rav Lichtenstein, the hate? People tell me, prior people tell me, I can't believe. My neighbors, Palestine, all of a sudden, when they attacked us and they killed and they raped and they did the worst thing, nobody stood up. Hardly you heard a voice. In this hateful environment, we want to put up a country.
So a few points. One is, you know, I was learning now the halachas of, you know, Elon Musk is making something called the Neuralink. Right, where you could think and prosthesis will work,
yeah.
Right?
We have no.
So we were clearing what's going to be the halacha and Shabbos. So what did I find? I found that Nachrayim from hundreds of years ago already discussing this. I think they're thinking of the Neuralink, like before electricity, they bring a riot by the Mun. This is Asha Techelu, Techelu, Vasha Tavashelu, Tavashelu. But he said, why did they have to bake it Erev Shabbos? You could have the Machshava on Shabbos. So they said, you see, thinking to bake, the Machshava has a din of a Maisa also. And I'm astonished. I'm saying, somebody who lived 300 years ago is thinking of a Metzias where thinking could create an action? That's the Koyach of Chazal when they were doing the question of, you know, a surrogate motherhood. So the first tshuva was written almost 200 years ago by somebody who declared what would be if they substituted a rechem from one mother to another mother. Imagine writing this 200 years ago before they knew what germs were, before anesthesia, right? This is the Koyach. So I'm asking you something that's maybe sometime in the future, if Klal Yisrael would be 75%, 90% from, would we have a din to protect
I'm going to answer you. I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to challenge you and answer you with a question, but that's going to be the answer. Let's rephrase your question, which is a very nice question, but I'll rephrase it. What happens, chas v'chalila, when in Borough Park or Manhattan or Williamsburg is attacked by people who are coming to fight Jews? That is your question, and that is your answer. You're putting me in a place where I need to say, is it allowed to have a Medina that we govern when we are still in Golis? But your question has nothing to do with this. I'm going to transfer your question to America. When we see the hatred of the Goyim, and the question would be, Chas v'chalila, if we know that thousands are coming to attack us, and it becomes a Mechemes Mitzvah, and everybody needs to fight, definitely the Gedolim are going to decide that it's Kalam v'chipo, so we have to go to save ourselves.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Rabbi Lichtenstein.
Bye-bye. Joining us from Eretz Yisrael is Naftali Pudel. He was served a year and a half in the Israeli army in the paratroopers unit. He's an American, and now he's married, has a daughter in Miluim. Welcome, Naftali.
Thank you for having me.
So, Naftali, you learned in Shalavim for 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you went to the army.
Correct.
Could you tell us, as a religious soldier, what was some of the adversity, if any, that you faced, you know, religion-wise, being a member of the army?
So I'll start with, first of all, that I served when I was in my original service in the Haredi unit called Haredim B'tam Chanim. And now when I'm in Miluim, I'm in a regular unit mixed with both religious and not religious. So in terms of my training, in terms of my commanders, there was absolutely no, like, religious conflict. The army, in terms of just the way it's set up, is set up in a way where you can be religious, and I think it even in cases of people thriving and growing. But in terms of a personal conflict comes up more of being able to make those decisions after long nights of not sleeping and doing either drills or doing actual actual army activity. You know, you have to get up in the morning and say, you know, I'm going to take away my time for sleep and I'm going to daven, or I'm going to take away time to hang out with my friends or sleep and to learn for an hour. So that's really, I think, a more of a personal thing than, because I think the army as a whole is really set up in a way where you could do it if you put an effort.
We've heard, I actually heard this from Yitzhak Berkowitz. He said that many of the boys who go to the army, there's a 25% fallout rate because of, you know, there's girls in the army, there's irreligious commanders, there's sort of an avira. It's supposed to be a melting pot. The idea being of breaking down individual, you know, barriers so that you could become part of the great Israeli mass, you know. So that's sort of the goal of the army. Did you encounter that? Have you seen it? Give us some personal experience.
Yeah, I think absolutely not, both from my experience and from experience of my friends, that is not true. I don't think, maybe historically it was different, but no one's trying in the army to make you not religious. I find quite the opposite. The army is set up in a way where if you want to be religious, you can. And I think in terms of an individual wanting to make that decision, wanting to stay strong in his frumkeit, there are ways to do that. You spoke on the show many times about Hezder, which again is besides spending part of your service learning. You go in with your friends, you go in with your yeshiva to a unit together, and when you're together, there's this obviously strength in numbers and strength in creating that avira for yourself. So the army has programs to be able to help guys that you want to stay from and want to grow can do that in the army together.
So what are they all referring to? Like when you talk to these Rabbanim about the great takana of the army, like it doesn't seem you've encountered it. Like is it just like where is it coming from? Were you an exception? Should I interview a few more soldiers? Like, give me some ideas.
Again, you could interview other people. And, you know, I'm sure everyone has different experiences. I think if you look at historically, you know, the beginning of the Hakamat Medina and the beginning of the army, there was some of that in Israeli culture and definitely in the army of the anti-religious, that existed. I really, in my personal experience and my friends that I've spoken to, have not encountered that no one is out to get you, no one's going to try to make you not religious in the army. What maybe they're referring to is that if you go in by yourself and you end up in a unit without anybody religious, in any sense, you know, that's not, this is not just an army thing, you know, whether it's secular college or whatever it is.
Or if you go to college, or if you get a job in an office where you're the only religious person with a whole cover of religious people.
Exactly. That's difficult. And, you know, so definitely that has its challenges. And that's not what I did, because both when I went into the regular army, I went into a Haredi unit. So that was set up. And I drafted with 3 or 4 friends who also were Hezbollah guys and interested in learning and growing. And now I run into a Milim unit where I also have, you know, a bunch of friends who are also religious and learn and growing. And so, again, that could be what they're referring to. But I think overall, if a guy is looking to grow in his army experience, it's definitely doable. There's ways to do it.
Do any of the guys go to the army and come out more religious because they're inspired, sort of the fact that they're protecting Kol Yisrael, that it's a Mohammed mitzvah? Like one guy wrote in his letter about Rabbi Akiva, Masi Avi Av Kasav Azev Yadli Le'akaymen Av Haftas Hashem Alekecha V'chol Avaf V'chol Nafshecha, that they're putting their lines on the line for Kol Yisrael. Do you see people coming out of the army uplifted?
I definitely think that's true, both for people who have religious backgrounds. I've seen people who've been, you know, inspired, both people who grew up not religious and grew up religious. They're, for me personally, grew up religious, still am religious, and still trying to grow. There's something inspiring about seeing people get up after a night of not sleeping and saying, we're going to have a minyan now, even though this is our, you know, only time to sleep, and we're going to try to get a Torah, even if we need to get it at mincha, that's the only time we'll get it, and people will come. So for me, that's what's always been inspiring, that real, you know, real effort in going above and beyond in terms of religiosity, or people after, you know, sitting down and doing Daf Yomi. I saw a lot of that, a lot of Daf Yomi going on in this war.
Daf Yomi after a day of war.
Yeah. Well, guys, there's, I mean, all these pictures in Gaza of people in buildings, people in tanks, sitting down with the Schadenstein printed out the smaller one, the travel edition.
So wow.
And my friends who are not religious, you know, they see that. And there's definitely cases of people become more religious in the army. I know people, but even if not religious, there's something inspiring. There's something that they respect seeing that.
Well, Naftali, thank you very much. And Rabbi Nishalm should protect you and shelter you and all of Klal Yisrael and all of the soldiers.
Amen. Thank you so much for the interview. And again, I really love the show. Very much appreciate it.
Kol tov. Take care. Bye-bye. Joining us from Eretz Yisrael is Rabbi Yeshua Pfeffer. He's a Rav in Yerushalayim in Ramot. He was formerly a Dayan in Rabbi Shweiss's Bezdin. He's published Sfarim articles. He's one of the more published Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, period. He's also on the board of Netzach Yehuda, which helps the Haredi soldiers. Welcome, Rabbi Yeshua.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. It's good to be on the show.
So here's my question. Could you explain to us there is such an antipathy by the Haredim to serving in the army? And let's start with the beginning. Why is that? And why don't they feel the responsibility? Like, what did you know, Moshe say to Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven? Hachechem teishu l'molchama v'atem teishu fei, right?
Hachechem
yavoyu l'molchama v'atem teishu fei. I mean, like, you know, chai noisei esatzmai. Why don't you want to bear your own responsibility? So can you, let's walk it from the beginning. Why don't, you know, the Haredim and Eretz Yisrael have devoted their life to a life of justice, a life of emes, a life of Yerushalayim, and to living a moral life. And here we have a taina on them, which seems to be a moral taina, right? So what is the logic behind it?
So that's a very good question. And I could give you the different excuses. There are a range of excuses. And you know what? Maybe we'll get to them later. But let me for now cut to the chase and try to explain what lies behind.
Rabbi Yeshua, I just want to start it with an excuse. In a way, is pejorative. In other words, it indicates, like, the dog ate my homework. It's an excuse. My friends from Eretz Yisrael, who I learned there for many years, were really Yirei Shamayim. Many of them live in the most simplistic, really abject poverty because they have a real moral cause. That they feel they're living the true life. They're living a life of emes. So I worry that we're calling it excuses. These are people who've made very tough decisions for themselves and their children, and they're not the type of people who are excuse people.
Well, let me explain what, So let me explain what the underlying cause is. And then I'm happy to speak about what types of arguments are sometimes put forward, but I don't think that's the underlying cause. The underlying cause for why Haredim don't serve in the IDF isn't related really to, let's say, Torah study, because then we would say, well, those who are learning shouldn't serve, but those who are not learning should serve. And that's not the situation. The situation is that somebody who's born into a Haredi family will not serve in the IDF period unless he finds himself off the derech and so on, and then he might fall into the army. And why is that? You're asking a good question. Surely this is a deep moral claim. So what's going on over here? And I think the basic, the core answer to this is a question of what's our underlying identity? How do we see ourselves? What's the story that we're living in? Haredi society and the rest of Israel are living two different narratives, two different stories, two different core identities. In the Haredi space, we're trying to perpetuate something from Eastern Europe. The yeshivas that we learn in are named after Eastern European towns and yeshivas. So are our communities, so are our Hasidic courts, so is everything that we do. It's a project of perpetuation. The rest of Israel is engaged in a different type of project. It's a project of a new Jew, which is strong and powerful. It's a transition from powerlessness to power. It's a question of creating a new identity of a Jew that is Israeli and strong rather than European and exilic and weak. And from the beginning, Haredi society basically made a statement, and this is very generalization oriented. Of course, there have been different times and different individuals and different leaders, but overall, Haredi society is leading or living within a narrative, within a story that is distinct and separate from the rest of Israel, when the army is the institution that is the most powerful representative, the most powerful realization of what it means to be an Israeli, a Zionist, somebody that holds, that wields the power that we never had. And from Ben-Gurion's perspective, the army had two purposes. Number one, to defend the nation, of course, but number two, to serve as the melting pot for this new kind of vision of the Israeli Jew. And therefore, from the Haredi perspective, the pasuk of Ha'achechem Yavoyu B'Malchama Va'atem Tesh V'Poy, it's like, you know what it's similar to, Rav David, I'll tell you. You ask a guy from America, okay? You ask a guy from Monsey, next to where you live, the Jewish people is now at war. Why don't you go serve in the army? Why are you not serving in the IDF and fighting for the Jewish people? What will he answer you? He'll say, yeah, I realize. Maybe it's an Elchanas Mitzvah even, you know, to defend the Jewish people. Ezer Yisrael Miat Tzar, says the Rambam, Elchanas Mitzvah. So why are you not going to serve? I'll say, you know what, it's an Israeli war. It's true, it's the Jewish people. It's to defend the Jewish settlement, but you know, I'm an American Jew. You know, I'm going to fight in the Israeli army. It's different. Maybe I'll daven. I'll say Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, and I'll think about the Yidden in Eretz Yisrael. You go to an average Haredi Jew in Israel. There's a similar sentiment. It's a Melchemes Mitzvah. It's L'chayra. It's Mamash a Melchemes Mitzvah. It's Hatzonas Yisrael Miat Tzar. But the average Haredi person doesn't see it as his war. It's not. He doesn't have that identity. And that's why, even though, of course, when you ask the people on the street, they'll speak about the fact that the army isn't a place for a good Jewish boy, and you're liable to go off the derech to go to the army. And they'll speak about other things, but underlying, behind that, is this deep distance, this deep difference in identity between the Haredi identity and the Israeli identity. Which story are you living in? Is Israel our story? Do we take responsibility for Israel in the deepest sense of defending the nation and fighting in the army? Or do we take responsibility for our back garden of Haredi society with Torah and Tefillah and religious services and Hasidic courts and Chesed and communities, but not for Israel? And the narrative of we're still in Golus among the Jews is a narrative that says our responsibility is for our communities and not for broader Israel. I think that's the underlying sentiment. That stands behind why it's so hard to step up to this responsibility.
So here's my question. You talk about the narrative of powerlessness. And by the way, when I see paintings of like the Haim, there's like, you know, you go, there's a painter in Eretz Yisrael, I forgot who it is, makes all these beautiful paintings like from Europe, throwing tashlich. And what's missing is right behind the people throwing tashlich is the Kazakhs trying to kill them. Like the good old days is a lie. There were no good old days. It was all bad old days. It was from pogrom to Inquisition to Holocaust. There were no good old days. But I think what I'm struggling with is the powerlessness.
David, let me just, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have to say, in Haredi, at least in Israeli Haredi society, what you're saying now is anathema. That is not the picture that's portrayed. There is a certain nostalgia. There's a certain yearning for Golas over here. Bli Neder, I'll send you. You can put it onto the Myra McComas for this episode. I'll send you a caricature that was published recently in the Ted Neiman that pits side by side life in Golas on the one hand and life with independence on the other. The life in Golas is this beautiful blossoming tree with wonderful fruit of emunah and kashrut and tairah and all the good things in life. And the life of independence is this shriveling, rotting tree where everything is bad and you have terror and you have death in battle and you have kfirah and all these other things. And that,
so wait,
excuse
but,
me,
but,
that,
but that's,
that
let's discuss about that.
Ingratitude. It's ingratitude to a Kodesh Baruch Hu that has brought us to a place where we can fight for our survival and we're not at the mercy of the Umay Sa'olam.
I would love to see that thing, because let's just look. I always like to say you're entitled to your own opinion but not your own facts. In Lithuania, someplace between 90 and 95% of the people became Frey. Reb Aaron Kotler, his siblings were Frey. Reb Reuven Grzovsky was one of seven. All his siblings were Frey. Reb Yankov Kamenetsky.
My grandmother was a she told me a lot of stories. I'm very familiar with it.
The whole litter became Frey. So I don't know where this picture of like, you know, the Yerushalmi, I mean, over there, the dropout rate was 95%. Whatever you say about the Haredi community in Eretz Yisrael, whatever the dropout rate is, it's nowhere near 95%, right?
You're right, but it's presented in this way as part of a broad agenda of ensuring a distance, ensuring a separateness, an isolation, a segregation from the rest of Israel. Listen, the fear of Haredi society when it comes to involvement with, engagement with, feeling a part of Israel is understandable. The problem is that policy of isolationism, which has been tremendously successful, listen, Haredi society has blossomed and has grown from being 3% of Israel at inception to being 14% today, which is an incredible success. But you know what? With success comes responsibility. Every year, there are 13,000 boys who enter draft conscription age within Haredi society, 13,000. Can you imagine what an unbelievable bracha it would be for Israel and for the army if only some of them, those who are not the learners, would go into the army? What an elevation it would be for the army and for Israel. What a bracha it could be. With success comes responsibility, and I fear that we haven't yet internalized that responsibility towards Israel, towards the Jewish people in this broader sense that we need to accept at this stage.
You know, my father, Zuchama Brachazah, who's Yartzeit is tonight, he used to say that on the Gemara, it says, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when it talks about, you know, Midas Royce, it says, Mahusa Bali Taga.
Right.
Right. A royalty without a crown. He said, right. Taga means responsibility. If you have a Malchusa without responsibility. But let me go back to powerlessness. Nobody who survived the Holocaust, and there weren't very many from Lithuania, very sadly. I mean, there was not, except for the mayor, all the yeshivas were killed out, right? Kletsk, Baranovich, Slobodka, there were hotels. I mean, there was nothing left from any of them, right?
Slobodka, part of Slobodka came to Hebron, so part of Slobodka was saved.
Before the war. But whatever left there that was killed. If you would ask them, would you like a machine gun? You know, it's like none of them, you know, did they want to be led by everyone? So powerlessness was a klal, it wasn't a bracha.
It was right. A klala, but you know what? Once you live with it for so long, it becomes a feature rather than a bug.
There is another issue. They believe that shalei timra du ba'umais still applies to Klal Yisrael today.
No, I do not think so. That is a hashkafa, which of course is still espoused by Satmar and by certain groups that are Satmar affiliates. Let's say you ask the guy, you ask the Haredi guy in the streets, or even the Haredi Rabbanim that I and many of them I'm in touch with on some level, they will never tell you Shalei Timra du Ba'umais. Right now we're here. There are millions of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, close to 8 million. Jews living here right now. It's a defense campaign. This is no longer a Merida Ba'umis. Initially, when the Zionist movement wanted to establish a state, so of course this claim was much more relevant. And of course, the Osamech and others gave different terusim that it's with the permission of the League of Nations or the United Nations, or that it wasn't a war rather, and so on. There were different terusim. You know, it says one of the claims against Zionism was if Hashem won't build it, then it won't be built. And therefore the claim was it is never going to work. But what are you going to say after it did work? So I guess Hashem was with this Bais there. That would be potentially the conclusion. But I don't think today the issue of Merida Ba'umais is a very cogent claim. We're here, we're defending ourselves against terrible enemies.
Why are they adopting this attitude of helplessness? Why?
Well, because the raison d'etre of Haredi communities, of Haredi life, at the outset, at the beginning of the State of Israel, was one of rehabilitating the yeshiva space, copy-pasting what was in Europe to this new settlement in Eretz Israel, and reestablishing it. To reestablish the yeshiva world, all the energies, all of the pioneering spirit had to be funneled into the yeshiva space. And that was instead of the Zionist space, right? There were two great pioneering projects at the outset of the State of Israel. One great pioneering spirit was Israel, draining the swamps, setting up the different state institutions, setting up the branches of government, establishing the economy, setting up the army. That was one great pioneering spirit. The Haredi base in Eretz Israel that didn't want its youth to go into the Zionist space, and many of them did and lost their religion. It was fiercely secular at the time, so they needed an alternative pioneering spirit. What was the alternative pioneering spirit? Everyone into the Beis Medrash. And the Beis Medrash was a place that emulated the figure, the spirit, the image of the yeshiva bacher. And the yeshiva bacher, again, it's a perpetuation of what there was in Europe. Now, yeshiva bacher in today, Rav David, are no longer wimps. They're not feeble. You know, you look at yeshiva bacher, the Perege Roshalmi, the extremists who are protesting, they go and fight with the police. They fight with the horses. These are not your feeble, you know, wimpy yeshiva bachurim anymore. We've been in Israel for many years already, and it's rubbed off on us. I think we're much stronger, we're much more, you know, ready to put up a fight. But still, there's a real reticence from the IDF. We have to remember, the IDF is this melting pot of Ben Gurion that created a narrative that a Haredi person cannot be in the IDF. Until today, there's a certain line of thought or a certain understanding out there in the Haredi space. You can't really stay firm and strong in the IDF. It's not a place
Let's talk about that for a minute. I spoke to a big literature Rosh Yeshiva, and he said to me 25% of frum boys in like the heads of the world who go to the IDF become irreligious. Is that true or not?
It used to be that the heads of the boys had a hard time in the IDF. Today, I just spoke today to Rosh Yeshiva in the head of the space, Rav Yaakov Midan, one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Haritzion. And he told me, by the way, I just had a conversation with him totally unrelated to this interview, but he told me that that's no longer true. However, it's important to put out there that it's no longer true for the religious Zionist boys who are brought up that going to the army is an ideal. You're realizing a mitzvah. You're doing something great. And that gives you a lot of strength. And also they strengthen one another. Meaning in the religious Zionist space, they've experienced They've been in the army for multiple decades already, so they've learned how to handle it. They've learned how to strengthen one another. They've learned to appreciate this as a bar mitzvah within a part of the Hesder program and so on. The Haredim are not there yet. We've never done army service, not as a group. There is Netzach Yehuda, which is a Haredi battalion, but the type of boys that go into Netzach Yehuda are not your classic type, you know, not just not learners, but also not people who are living the Haredi lifestyle anymore. So by definition, that's going to be a weaker battalion in terms of standards, in terms of Shemayim, in terms of Torah mitzvahs, and so on. So the question of how the Haredim will integrate into the army is an open question.
Do you send your kids to the army?
That's one of the questions which I get asked this question a lot. Listen, when my older kids started school and then went to high school and so on, all of the kind of new Haredi institutions in which you can on the one hand go through the Haredi system, but on the other hand, the army becomes a legitimate option, they weren't even around. I set up one of those yeshivas from which some of our boys go to the army, but when I sent my oldest boys to yeshiva, that wasn't even around. So it becomes something where the question of do you send your kids to the army is even a non sequitur. Like, what does it mean sending your kids to the army? The kid is 17, he's 18 years old. He's going to do his thing, and what's he going to do? Well, if he's in a standard kind of Haredi institution where everyone is carrying on in regular yeshiva, then that's what he's going to do. Now, the truth of the matter is, if I would have a choice of whether to send, whether not to send, this is not a simple decision. Of course, if one of my sons would decide to go to the army, I would be deeply proud of him. By the way, let me just tell you this. Yesterday, there was a person here in my office who came to meet with me. He brought three volumes that he had written on Cheskes Mammon, okay, on Sfeikas Achrois, in Sfeikas of Mammonus, and that's why he came to me. He wanted to bring me these three volumes that I should go through them and then tell him what I think. It's going to take me some time. Now, we spoke for an hour about Cheskes Mammon Meredith. At the end of the discussion, he told me about another project that he has, which is called Yeshiva Ptucha, like Open University, Open Yeshiva, that his son is leading. His son is a 35-year-old, apparently an amazing Talmid Chacham, and he was drafted into the army for 4 months. His son served in the army now for 4 months as a Tokhan, meaning serving in a tank unit. He was in the north serving in a tank for 4 months. And he said, listen, because he was in a tank and in the army, so he couldn't do the like really intricate and difficult figures. So instead he wrote on Sefer Ava of the Rambam. Sefer Ava means Krishna and Tfila and Brachais and Mila and Tfilin and didn't remember and something else. So and over those 4 months that he was serving in Miluim, he was serving in reserve duties at war in a tank, he wrote a sefer on an Ian sefer on Sefer Ava of the Rambam. I was astounded. Ashrecha Yisrael, we have people who are serving in the IDF and writing sforim for the Ian for this online yeshiva. I was so astounded. But you know what? There's a big difference between someone that hails from a religious Zionist background that's able to, you know, he's brought up with this different type of mindset, of ideology that you can merge, you can combine. You can combine godless in Torah together with serving in the IDF. We don't have that in the Haredi space. We don't have that at the moment. Will we have that down the line? Be'ezrat Hashem. But there's a long way to go before we get there.
Interesting.
Amazing, though. Isn't that amazing? Unbelievable.
So do you see it changing?
I'll tell you. I think that right now there is tremendous momentum. There's momentum. There's momentum in Israel generally because there's this tremendous demand from Haredi society. Be a part of us. Serve in the IDF. And there's also momentum within. I'll tell you what I think it's going to take. I think there's three things. First of all, I think it's very important that the demand from non-Haredi society change in its semantic field. The demand up until now has always been Shivyon Benetel. Do you know what Shivyon Benetel means?
No.
Shivyon, equality, Benetel, in the burden. Equality in sharing the burden. But you know, Rav David, equality is very binary. It's one or zero. And it's utopian. We'll never have equality because even today, the Hezda boys don't do the same as the secular boys. And women and men are not equal. And even if you're in the army, some of you are in combat duty and others are on army radios. There's no equality. And equality isn't able to pay attention and be attentive to those elements of society that require compromise, something softer. You know, we don't want to draft all the yeshiva boys. We want the elite boys to be in yeshiva. We don't want to draft everyone. So that would really be a disaster for the Jewish people. We want to leave, you know, a lot of boys in yeshiva. That's not also what society needs. What we need, what Israeli society needs, isn't equality. What it needs is brotherhood. What it needs is partnership. What it needs is responsibility. I think the cry needs to be a part of it. Take responsibility. And you know what? Brotherhood, right? Achva, love of our brothers, that's inspirational. No one's inspired by this abstract value of equality. No one wakes up in the morning and say, wow, today I'm going to fulfill the value of equality. But if we think about we're brothers, we can take this responsibility. It's a privilege. We can bring an elevation into the army. We can do something great over here. That's inspiring. So I think the semantic field needs to change, number one. I think number two, yes, Haredi society needs to live up to this responsibility. Baruch Hashem, since Simchas Torah, there's been strong momentum in that direction. Many are realizing that it's our story, that Israel as a state, as a political representation of the Jewish people, is our story. We have a great shared story here, and we're big enough and confident enough and strong enough to transition from a Tevas Noach, from a Noah's Ark, to a lighthouse, you know, different kind of windows. The windows of a Tevas Noach are tiny. They just allow in some light. The windows of a lighthouse are huge because they project the light to our surroundings. And we, Haredim, need to make that transition from a Tevas Noach, shying away from the storm with tiny windows, to a lighthouse that we can project, that we can be a part of it, that we can bring elevation and Kedusha and Torah to all of these institutions within Israel. And number three, and I regret to say this, I think that it will probably require certain sanctions from on the part of Israel. I just don't think that the leadership in the Haredi space is ready enough to say, okay, whoever isn't a full-time, all the way Torah student should go to the IDF. Rav Shach used to say, someone who doesn't learn full-time Torah study and doesn't go to the IDF is damaging the Torah space. That's what's happening today. Nobody in the Haredi space is going to the IDF, and this is being Moti Shem Ra on Lomdei Torah, and it's creating a Chilul Hashem. And I wish that we would awaken to this Metzius and to change and to make this simple declaration that we need to take this responsibility. I don't see it happening, and therefore it might require sanctions, and those sanctions could be very painful. And that could blow up in a very unpleasant, and unpleasant is an understatement for where this can go. I deeply hope that it won't come to that result.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Rabbi Yeshua. Thank you very much for explaining this and putting on such a, you know, an impassioned defense of basically of Moshe's argument to the Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruvei.
Yeshua, Rav David, all the best. Take care.
Also. We have the honor of joining us from Eretz Yisrael, Harav Moshe Aaron Friedman. He says a shir, he's a Ram and a Mir in Yerushalayim, a very crowded, well-accepted shir. It's an honor to have you with us. Welcome, Rabbi Sharon.
Shalom Aleichem.
Shalom Sharon. The Shulchan Aruch does not address this, right? Amazingly. Like, you know, every part of our lives is addressed. The Shulchan Aruch does not address how many hours a day do we have to learn? And you know, clearly, if you're a balabas, it could be one, for, you know, yeshiva man could be one thing, but what is, you know, it doesn't say anywhere. And,
right.
You know, if I want to go to a baseball game, can I go to a baseball game? Okay, not a baseball game. If I want to go to a Masibas Chaverim, the singing Kalbach songs, pick your favorite thing. Like, what is my chiv? And therefore, based on that, what am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? When am I yaitza? When am I not yaitza?
Right. Okay. So I should, we'll say like this. The Pasuk says, V'higisa bo yoimam v'layla. And there's actually a machloikis if yoimam v'layla means 1 minute by day and 1 minute by night, or the entire day and the entire night. So those are the full two extremes of the options of what the chiyuv is. Is it just Pasuk echad b'yoim, Pasuk echad b'layla, or is it the entire day and the entire night? Of course, the main source to this is the Gemara in Menachos Daf Tzadi Tes. Because in Menachos Daf Tzadi Tes, we have actually a Machlokes Tanoim. The Machlokes Tanoim starts with the topic of Shulchan, that it says that the Lechem HaPonim should be on the Shulchan Tamid. And the question there also, does Tamid mean always the entire in Yoin and the entire Laila? To which case the Gemara explains that it's necessary that when they're taking off the Lechem on Shabbos, to right away make sure with a split-second precision the next week's loaves of Lechem HaPonim are already on. Well, no, you can shift. There could be a break, and you could do a Mesivas Chaver and Mesivas Ka'alach in between, because as long as the Lechem, on Shabbos afternoon, as long as the Lechem was there by the day and there by the night. The Gemara Mefurish compares this topic about a Lechem HaPonim to the Limud Torah, whether it's Yom Balayla, 1 minute by day, 1 minute by night, or the entire day, the entire night. Surprisingly, it's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai who says 1 minute a day is enough, and Rabbi Shmuel, who says it needs to be the entire day and the entire night. Why? The reason this is a surprise is because in Brachas, Daf Lamed Hey, it's Mevor Faker. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is the one with the attitude of Tairosai Umnosai, and Rabbi Shmuel is the one that every person should have a job and whatnot. For some reason, Rabbi Bikisa Bar Yom of Alayla, it's turned around the other way. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says 1 minute a day, 1 minute a night, and Rabbi Shmuel is the one that says entire day, entire night. Could I just elaborate on that one more? You want to ask another question?
No, sir. I will elaborate on my question. But my question is going to be to you, and how do we paskin? What do we do?
Oh, how do we paskin is interesting. How do we paskin? Well, since it's really totally lechem haponim, there's actually a steer in the Rambam, because by lechem haponim, he paskins the entire time, and legabi tayrus faker, meaning it's a stira in the Rambam itself. This is really, you know, for Bilpo, but it's a stira in the Rambam itself between lechem haponim and lat talmud tayra. But if you want to get to a more practical thing, there are people that want to learn the whole time, and there are people that want to learn only a little bit. The truth is, one is supposed to learn whenever he can. One is supposed to learn whenever he can. I heard one say, very, to me, it had a big rush, and when I heard the story, I started crying. I can't say why, I don't know, but when I heard the story the first time, I mamish started crying. It's a story of the Chazan Ish, who as a young man was once visiting, I think, by Reb Chaim Oizer, or I'm not sure exactly who, and when he came out from Reb Chaim Oizer, there was someone else, another visiting Rav waiting there, and he said, "Who are you?" He saw he was a distinguished young man. He said, "Who are you?" He said, "I'm the son of the Rav of Hosava." He says, "And what do you do?" You know, Machtalid, and he says, "I have a store," which he did. He had a store. So this Rav asks him, "So do you learn?" He says, "Whenever I have time, I learn. Whenever I have time, I learn." That was the Chazan Ish. There's the Chazan Ish extreme of whenever I have time, I learn. And then there's, you know, everyone, his Madrega, whenever I have time, I learn. It's a very important Rambam to speak out.
But let me go back to the story with the Chazan Ish.
Yeah.
What is the Makar for that? Like, let's assume for a minute we hold, like, the Rashbi in Tzadik Tes, where he says,
right,
if you said it, Kriya Shema Shachar Sa'arvis, Yaitza. So, like, so for an example, Lulav and Esrig, how long during the day do you hold?
Or even Tfilin,
right? The answer is, yeah, you take your Lulav and Esrig, then you put it down. Now, if somebody would say, I wear Tfilin all day, you know, if somebody walked into
the mirror... Tfilin is different because it's not a loaded issue if it's all day or just once a day.
So I'm saying, if in the mirror yeshiva somebody wore that Tfilin all day, he would be looked at a little mudna.
Right.
If he came into the base medrash Chansukis and he held the Lulav and the Esrig the whole day, he would be looked at a little mudna. Right? So if indeed we paskin like the Rashbi, that you're supposed to do with Shacharis V'Arvis, Kriya Shema Shacharis V'Arvis, so then why did the Chazon Ish say, I do it whenever I can, or much more than the Chazon Ish, I mean, you know, we go to the Goyin, etc. I'm just trying to halachically prompt you to give us
the answer. The answer is that the stira between Rav Shimon Ben Yochai and Rav Yishmael, which you can go to answer the stira from various angles, but what being covered over here is that on one hand, yes, Rashbi and Tzavi Tess and Menachas says that the Higisabai is 1 minute only, but that same Rashbi is the one that's saying that the Rossing and Nosai, and in to call him in Brachis, in one of the three places where the Gemara uses the Russian Toyra Matahail, or such a style, it could either be in final. Let's start with this one. In Brachis Lamed Hey, it says, Im Adam Choyrish Bishas Harisha, Vizereya Bishas Zuria, Vikoitse Bishas Ksira, and I'll add, Kumzitzes Bishas Kumzitz, Toyra Matahail El. All right, he'll never learn. So this is Rav Shimon Ben Yochai talking. And Lahuma said, Rabbi Shmuel, who's that cat? He's saying, Choyrish Bishas Harisha, and Zereya Bishas Zuria, V'oilam Kim and Hagi Noi. He's the one that told his nephew, and quoted that Gemara in Nachas Abites, that wanted to learn Philosophia, Chochmas Yivanis, and he said, sure, problem, but only at time that's not Yoin and not Laila. Now, there's another factor also that you have to factor in, it's the Shinantan. Because even the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, I'm talking to someone, you know, I know you know the Gemara, so I'll try to, you know, background, but the Gemara is discussing that the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel actually told him, he says, I know you have to know Kola Torah Kula, but it's a scary Gemara. He says, I know Kola Torah Kula. What does that mean? Could I run Kola Torah Kula? Now, I don't know what that means, he knows Kola Torah Kula, but that's what he said. But it's not for that. There's a non-starter here. Because of the Shinanten of the Ritarim Chodad and the Ficha, you anyways have to learn Kol HaTorah, and you can only get to the Shaiva Chacham HaTivadas after you know everything anyway. So that's a separate Machias.
Right. I mean, I would point out, though, that there is a third Shita in Menachis of Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, who says,
right.
Pasuk says, Ela Bracha. That's a whole...
Right.
So there is some seems to be like a third opinion. But to summarize, let me just tell me, is this what you're telling us? You have Rabbi Shmuel who says, Hanig b'minig derech eretz. Look, you have to live. You have to pay your tuition bills. You have to pay your rent bills. You have to pay your et cetera, right? And if not, you know, you're gonna end up being a listim, like the Shulchan Aruch says. If you don't, or the Torah, the Lashon Aram says, if you can't pay your bills, you're gonna have to steal to pay your bills. But the same Rabbi Shmuel holds, you have to live a life where you can pay your bills. But every extra minute, you should be learning. You see that from the Gemara and Menachos. That's the first opinion.
Right.
Then you have the Rashbi who says even Shema Yisrael in the morning at night is enough, right? Which is seems to agree with Rabbi Shmuel. The Hanig Minig Derech Eretz means you yaitza with that amount, and then the rest of the day you could do whatever you want. But the same Rashbi says, but it's a much big mila, of course, if you could be Vagisa B'Yayim V'Layla K'Pshute, not waste a minute.
Right.
This is for Yechidim, but Avada, they both agree on that, right? And
right.
Then you have Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni who says, look, the Vagisa B'Yayim is a bracha, that you should be Zoicha to it. So everybody, it seems, all Shitas agree that the best thing is as much as you can, right?
Right.
And there's just a question is, what is the absolute minimum? He says the minimum is Shema, right? He says the minimum would be Hanig ben Minig Derech Eretz. But everybody would agree that as much as you can. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yes. So far, we can set it up like that. Although I want to add two more details. First of all, in this topic is Ran and Doran, and that's, of course, that if a person would make a neder or a shavua about learning or not learning, instead of going against the Torah. Let's not even talk about the case of the Ran. Let's talk about if a guy would make a shavua that he's going to do a kumzitz for a few hours. Is that a shavua lavra of every Torah? Meaning, and the Ran actually differentiates between what's in the first the Torah and what's not in the first the Torah. Lagabi the gedorim of ein shavua chal lavra of every Torah. And on one hand, he says a person sarach lumei b'chol koychay. Which some say is because of the Shinantan, but on the other hand, he brings that Mefurish is really only the one Pasuk. If someone would make a Shavua that he's not even going to do one Pasuk for a night and a day, that would look like be a Shavua of the Vetira. But to swear that he's only going to do that and not for more already wouldn't be within the realm of being Shavua of the Vetira. That's one detail. And one other Nakuda.
So what do you take out of the Ran? What's your point?
No, what you see in the Ran is that as a Kaveh of what a person's Chiv is, this all the time. As a kiveh b'chalal, to ever know what a chiv is, a good litmus test is to see what if I made a shul that would or wouldn't do that. How far would it go there? So I'm just saying you could also. It's not even exactly the case. Now I'm coming from a different angle. The Ran is when a person made that he's going to assign a second. I'm talking about if a person with the other angle of it. If a person would get in the first and say I'm making a shul, the next week I'm going to learn 2 minutes today. Is the shul chal? So they have to do, if you want to learn more, they have to do a Taurus Nadarin. Or can you say, no, the Shavua wasn't Chal, you were Mechoyit Klein B'chol Kaychay. Well, I don't know what the bin is in such a case. Hanizda, Lilmoid, Rak, Hanizda, Kikolian.
Right. So the Ran's position is, so the Ran's position is that you Mechoyit Me'ikra Din to learn day and night.
Right, but he actually differentiates that there's a difference between what's in the first Bekra and not.
Right.
And he has a Klal, Lagabi Shavua, that there's a difference when Lagabi Shavua, Lagabi Shavua, Lagabi Shavua, Lagabi Shavua, Lagabi Shavua, Lagabi Shavua, Lagabi Shavua,
So you said
in the Shavua
you may not have a problem, but from the Ran you see that there isn't, he seems to paskin, right, like the Rashbi in Brachas, that there's a chiyuv to learn or as much as you can. But interestingly, I just want to point out, Lahalacha, Rashi disagrees with the Ran in the Dharam.
Where's the Rashi?
On the spot. Right? Rashi on the spot in the Dharam.
Oh, Rashi of Nadarim. Okay. Fine.
Yeah, he disagrees with the Ran. Yeah. As does the rest of the Mefarshim. In other words, if you look in the Rashi and the Rashi disagrees. The Radvaz actually in the Tshuva brings. He says the Ran is an outlier shita that disagrees with. He says that Rabbeinu Yoina, the Rashi, etc. He brings a list of who argue on the Ran.
And another thing can we speak out is, if we're already not going to go polar about like only 1 minute or Mamzvi the next Chazanish, let's talk about the Rambam that talks about Baal Omnis. And he wants to give a suggestion, and the Rambam is very adamant about that a person shouldn't just rely on Matanis and he should work. When the Rambam wants to give in Perak Aleph, Halacha Yud Beis, an outline for what a Baal Omnis should do, and he's talking about the fact that your Seder Lima should, of course, include Shlish Mikra, Shlish Mishnah, Shlish Gemara. So, and I quote, since we're talking about someone who, let's say, is going to work for 3 hours a day, and he leaves himself 9 hours to learn, so he says, okay, so it should be 3 hours Mikra, 3 hours Mishnah, 3 hours Gemara. There's a Chabura in the mirror called the Yud Beis Shoyes Chabura, which really, take upon themselves to learn for 12 hours. And that's like, and not all the Inglaterra are doing, not all the Bacham are doing it. That's like a 12-hour Chabura. The Rambam is telling the Baal HaBas, who is working his 3 hours, how to organize his 9 hours, say, the Limud. That's wow.
Right. And I'm sure, have you seen the letter that the Rambam writes when he worked for the Sheikh or the Shah or the Emir of Egypt?
Right. No, I'm not familiar.
Oh, there's an amazing letter. It's a letter from the Rambam, Reb Yehuda ibn Tibbon. And
right.
Reb Yehuda ibn Tibbon was the one who translated the Pirush HaMishnayos LaRambam.
From Arabic, yeah.
Right. So you could imagine that the Rambam felt indebted to him at some level. Right, he made it accessible to the masses. So he wrote to him, could I come? I would love to come meet you, maybe learn with you. And the Rambam writes him back, this is a letter that the Rambam wrote to Reb Shmuel ibn Tibbon. Now, the Rambam, at the end of his life, he was 64 years old. He died at 68. He worked for the Sultan of Egypt, who was famous. He defeated Richard the Lionhearted in the Third Crusade, and he was called the Sultan Saladin. And he writes this back. He says, "Rabbeinu Shlomo himself knows how I'm able to write you this letter. Sometimes," he writes about how difficult he works, "I have to lean against the wall. I've had to lie down because I'm so ill and weak, coming to old age. But with respect to your wish to come visit me, I would like you to come, and I long for your companionship, though it worries me that you have to. My advice to you is not to take it." Then he writes like this: "I live in Forstadt, and the Sultan lives in Cairo. The distance between them is a mile and a half, 4,000 cubits. My duties to the Sultan are very heavy. I must see him every morning to check on his health. It often happens that there is an officer or two who needs me, and I have to attend to healing them all day. Therefore, as a rule, I am in Cairo early each day, and by the time I come back to Forstadt in the evening," he says, "either half the day is gone, or often it's in the evening. Under no circumstances do I come early. I am often ravenously hungry by then. When I come home, my foyer is always full with people, Jews and non-Jews, important people or not, judges and policemen, people who love me, people who hate me. They've been waiting for my medical advice. I get off my donkey, I wash my hands, I go out to see the hall and see them. I apologize and I ask they should be kind enough to give me a few minutes to eat. That is the only meal I eat all 24 hours. Then I go out to heal them, write them prescriptions and instructions for treating their problems. Patients go in and out until nightfall, and sometimes, I swear to you by the Torah, it is 2 hours into the night before they are all gone. I talk to them, prescribe for them, even while lying down on my back from exhaustion. And when the night comes, I'm so weak I cannot even talk anymore. Because of this, no Jew can come and speak to me in wisdom or have a private audience with me because I have no time except on Shabbos. On Shabbos, the whole congregation, or at least the majority of it, comes to my house and I instruct the members what they should do during the entire week. We learn together until the afternoon. Then they're all gone. That is my daily schedule." Interesting letter from the Rambam, though. So,
wow. I'm
crazy.
Wow.
So, which leads me, by the way, to something very interesting. There's a letter from a tshuva from the Ar Sameach. It's in the Ar Sameach Hilchos Talmud Torah Perak Aleph Halacha Beis, and he asks the question. He says, "Why don't Chazal give you how many hours a day you're supposed to learn?" And he says, "Because it's impossible." He says, "You have somebody who has the opportunity to learn all day, and that's his chiyuv. And then you have somebody who's beleaguered with parnasa or tsaris, and he can't do it all day, so he can't do all day." So he says, how could they give a chiyuv on something that's so personal?
Right. Wow.
Fascinating. It's a fascinating. So I'm just coming back to what you said earlier. You said, how much should you learn? Well, from the Gemara, it seems you should learn every opportunity you can. We have a there's a question, what's the minimal standard? Is it either one pasuk, right? Or is it everything except what you can, which would be Rabbi Shmuel? And then what's the maximum you should learn? Do you have a right sort of to be Simach al Anes? Which is
right.
But it seems that everybody would agree that you should learn every opportunity you can. Would you agree with that?
Yes. And there's another reason for it also, which has to do with the kiva and the staff and the fish in the water. There's another aspect over here. I don't even know if it's mitzvah, the chiyuv, or the mitzvah, or the doiraisa. It's just a mitzvah that a yid with Torah is like a fish with water, and that itself is a reason that a person is supposed to push it, keep himself from it. I'm coming from a different angle over here, but it's also a factor. It's pasha the mitzvah that a yid has to, as much as possible, connect to Torah as much as possible. There's also the famous medrash that the fish, even when they're in the water, swim up to the top in order to, if another drop of water is coming down, they swim to the top because they want to be connected to Torah. With permission, there's a famous story which either did or didn't happen with Rav Chaim Kanievsky. We have the info on it of a fellow that said he has a shiloh because he has an aquarium. He has an aquarium with fish, and he tested it. He sprinkled water from the top, and the fish did not swim to the top. Now, I don't know if he was asking Hashkofa a question or he wanted to get his money back on the aquarium, but Reb Chaim answered him. He says, no, only the fish in the sea that knows how vast and unbelievable Torah and is masik the godless, the echas of the commas of Torah, Neyube is also masik each tipa. But if it's just, you know, you just, yeah, you send something to think, your aquarium, your 20 minutes, your thing, your daily dose of Torah, then you don't know Neyube to also appreciate every drop.
There's a struggle in Eretz Yisrael about putting yeshiva boys in the army.
Right.
And famously, the Chazon Ish got a p'tur for all yeshiva guys. So when the Chazon Ish got the p'tur, and this is, I don't have the date in front of me, but Mizuchreini was like for 100, 150 boys.
I think 400, yeah.
Okay, 400 is all the time. Today it's 70,000.
Right.
Right. So the question is there any point where you say, look, you know, the Chazon Ish is post World War II. Telz was destroyed. Panevich was. There was no yeshiva. Mir was the only yeshiva left. And had in the Mir.
Right.
Mir Yishalayim had 40 guys. Right. The Olam HaTorah was destroyed. Like, is there any point where you say that's great? But now that Baruch Hashem, we have.
This is a shaila for the Chazon Ish of the door.
Yeah, I understand, but there's no Chazon Ish of the door. So what's happening?
Oh, that's a different question. Who's the Chazon Ish of the door? This is for the Chazon Ish of the door. It's not for me to...
I was just questioning a thought. Like, is there a thought process here? Like, let's say we would be 80% from Eretz Yisrael, 90%. Would we have any obligation to have an army and staff it? I mean, the Shulchan Aruch says that if Nachrim Shekifu a Seir, you go out and fill up a Shabbos, because Zion...
Nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael and Kibbutz Eretz Yisrael. This is
just a question. Yes, exactly. If we lived in Uganda, there was a giant Jewish community in Uganda, and the Tutsis or the Hutsis were coming to war, would there be a din, not in Eretz Yisrael, say, look, you know, it's a Mohammed mitzvah, very possibly, to go protect yourself. Would we have any obligation to staff an army?
Collectively, yeah. Question is, who would be in charge of it? I don't know the details.
Well, a general would be in the one who is most qualified by the, they would say he's the guy, he knows strategy, warfare, radar, whatever goes into, he went to military, he graduated number one in his class in West Point.
Right.
Would there be an obligation to staff an army? And if yes, so then looking forward, I mean, Baruch Hashem, the Freya having one kid or two kids per family, the Fruma, if you have, I think, 10 kids, you're still an Akara. You know what I mean? Having many more, so, the population has exploded. At what point do we say, we have an obligation. Like, do you have any thoughts? Like, what does common sense say?
We have to ask the Chazon Ish of the door.
And who would that be?
I defer the question. I apologize.
Okay. But then there's enemies coming. We have to know who to ask. So who would be the Chazon Ish to ask?
Right. That's the question. Yeah.
Well, if there wouldn't be a chazanish of the dyer, what would we do? It's just a practical question.
I don't know.
Sometimes answering a halacha shaila is a lot easier than answering a velt shaila, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a very touchy topic now. It's not a pashta situation because it's not that safe. I personally know people that were killed and injured, and it's not a pashta situation.
I'm going beyond the situation. I'm going beyond, like, you know, when we have a billion Arabs who want to kill us, like, you know, to prevent, you know, chas v'shalom, a worst case. So what is that? What would our obligation be? You know, I mean, the Gemara says, "I feel like halam echupasa." Like,
no, but the question is, who's running it? Also, I mean, it's not so much as
when it says halam echupasa,
you want to hear the stick in the thing?
Yeah,
you know, the army tactics are also taking into factor what's happening in Michigan, because that's Michigan, but that's what's going on. If you know what I'm talking about, what's going on in Michigan?
Yeah, without a doubt.
So it's a Michigan azak. So if you have the people making the decisions based on these kind of factors, and I don't know what to say.
But you know, it's like, and the questions are so complicated because you have to take into effect world opinion, you have to take into effect relationships with the American president and the American Congress. And so
who is sending us the weapons?
Yes, I think it's such a complicated thing that it's almost, you know, be more violent because, you know, you may not get any more weapons. Be less violent. Well, now, you know, all the hostages get killed. Well, it's so complicated. And who is the, and we could argue all day, who would the right general be? I mean, I don't know what Mark's saying.
These are questions that need Urim V'Tumim also.
So, but we don't have an Urim V'Tumim, so what do? You know, like Nachrim Shekifuir, in Chutzlar, they probably didn't have an Urim V'Tumim either.
Right.
But these are really sort of real life questions, you know, and they become more relevant. Unfortunately, they've become more relevant. Sadly.
Yes. Very, very intensely. Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and I believe you that story with the Chazanish is a Hasidic story.
Namaste, Chazanish.
Hatzlocha. Kol tov. I got you. Bye bye.